guys, welcome back to Uncommon Faith. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Amber.
And I'm Kim.
Oh, yes. Sorry. I was just so excited.
You want to start over? Sorry.
You're fine.
No, we're fine. Because I like, because it shows personality when we like mess up. I've been starting to do that more, just having the mess ups in there because it's just funny. We're not perfect. Okay, so today we have a very dear friend of ours, Kim Peacock, who is the author of Victorious Heart. Where did we first meet? Do you even have like a first memory?
Oh, I cannot remember the specific time of meeting you guys, but I just remember two rowdy teenage girls that were friends of my daughter's who I loved dearly, and you guys made me laugh a lot. So you guys were teenagers. But I can't remember the specific content of when. Do you guys remember?
I can remember when I met you. It was at youth group. I want to say you were my actual Bible study leader at the time, or you were involved in that. I was hanging out with another girl from church, and I remember getting in trouble that night because we ditched. And I remember
it wasn't me.
It was not her. But I do remember meeting you that night. And I don't remember if you were my Bible study leader from there on out or what it was, but that was the first time for sure. And then I found out you were my friend's mom. And
yeah. Was I nice when you ditched?
You were so nice.
Oh, good.
So nice. I'm like, woo! You're not going to tell my mom?
I think my first memory, it's weird because that Amber remembers specifically something and I'm like, mine's a little vague. But it must have, it had to have been before our trip to Russia with Megan.
Yeah.
Megan is Kim's daughter. I think that's what it was, because then me and Megan, we kind of joke because it was originally me and Amber, and then it was Megan and our other friend, Nicole. They were like besties and we were besties. And then we swapped. Because then Amber went off and was a little troublemaker, and me and Megan are like, we'll be best friends. We're the good kids, yeah. So we'll just be over here being the good kids. Let Amber do her thing.
Yeah, Amber and Nikki just got caught, I think, is the problem.
All the time. I remember we house sat for you one time, and I remember her going out to the stalls where the horses were. And I was like, I do not think we're allowed to be out here. Did she give you permission to come out here? She's like, oh, yeah, we're good. I still, to this day, do not know if we were allowed out there.
Yeah, well, it's all water under the bridge. Everybody lived, so that's good.
It's funny.
I remember one time, they must have been around the same time that she was house sitting, and we something got lost.
One of the animals.
I don't remember, but I remember. Was it?
Yeah, I think it was probably Rusty, the Australian Shepherd. Does that sound familiar? Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I just remember driving in her car at night and like going through like out, like looking for the dog or something.
Yeah.
That was when you and I spent the night and Megan was there. That was a long time ago. So long ago.
Yeah.
Good times.
There was one time where in the morning, because I remember we spent the night there, and in the morning we're like, let's go to Denny's in our pajamas. And we called Sarah, woke her up. And then we have that picture. I mean, I have that picture.
We came across all of our cutout pictures the other day. It's great.
Aww.
Yeah, there was a time. There was actually a couple times where we were not friends. And I cut her out.
Yeah, we all do that, though. Now you got to tape her back in.
I know. Well, luckily, there's some where she's cut out that she, I must have given her. I'm like, I cut it out and I gave her.
We literally, and we saved the other half of the picture. That's the best part to me. It's like, we didn't just throw it away. We held on to it.
Yeah.
It's funny. So now we have it. We just got to take it back.
I love it.
So it's almost like the little, like, best friends with, like, it's broken, like, the hearts.
Yeah.
Just like, it's our missing piece.
Yes.
All right, Kim. We want to know about you. Well, we know about you, but we want you to tell our listeners about you, who you are, what you're about, what you stand for, and then we'll have you go ahead and get into your story.
Okay. I am married. I've been married for about 37 years to Larry, and our lives have been very exciting. Some of the things are scary and hard, and some of the things are just exciting and fun. Larry is definitely a rebel, so he keeps me on my toes. But we had a blended family, so Lisa came from his first marriage, Nicole came from my first marriage, and when we got married, we had an instant little family. And then we had Megan, who is your guys' friend, and she is the only biological child of ours, but that's really not here or there. And then we ended up adopting three boys. Our oldest son is Alex. He's from Russia, so he got to spend the most time with us. During that time, we were just a typical blended family, you know, did all kinds of the dance stuff, the horse showing, all of that kind of stuff. Very typical family. And we thought nothing ever bad could happen to us. We didn't feel like we would ever experience anything bad because honestly, I thought God wouldn't give me more than I could handle. And that's not biblical, but that's what I believed. So,
yes.
That changed for us in 1998 when our daughter Nicole was killed in an accident. And we were on a family vacation and we saw the accident that took her life. And that's the time, that's the day that everything changed for us. And we went from being just an average blended family to a very broken family. And it took several years to come out of that. Several painful years. After that, we did adopt our two youngest sons. But that's me in a synopsis version. Since then, I've written a book just about grief and our grief journey, because my hope is to give hope to other people walking through those same hard times.
Right. Yeah, I remember reading the beginning of the book and just realizing the way the accident happened and everything that you went through. It's mind-blowing and amazing at the same time to know that God has given you such strength, which it's not easy. It is not easy.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. And it's only through him, only not because we are strong or I am strong, because I'm the biggest wimp you'll ever meet, but because he has literally lifted me up and helped me walk through it.
Yeah.
Me and Amber were just in California together. It had to, like, it literally was 2 days after the anniversary of Nicole's death. And so she was doing my hair and she handed me the book to start reading and literally started bawling. I'm like just from the first, you know, the first few words of the first chapter, because, and I think it's in, in the intro of it, of you wanting, you wanted readers to feel seen. And as a grieving mom, like the entirety of the book, I felt seen. We're not going to cry already. Goodness gracious. But I, you know, first and foremost, thank you for sharing your story and being so vulnerable and touching on those things specifically for a mom. You know, not all situations are going to be as traumatic as yours, and, you know, it can reach those, you know, whether their child, you know, was like infant loss or younger or an adult child or whatever. Like, I feel like all those feelings can be across the board. And where you feel like you failed as a mom, or that you didn't do what you were supposed to do, or like you even said, like in the first part where Larry literally like came out and said, you know, we should do something just in case we lose one of our kids. And you're like, oh, that's never going to happen. And for me, you know, we haven't really talked about it yet. So I want to focus on yours, but I wanted to show you that, that it's relatable in that way, that I had the same exact feelings when we lost our son of, don't worry, nothing bad's going to happen. Nothing, like, we're good people. We believe in God and nothing bad. Like, God would never, ever do this to us. That did lead me to, I did have several questions in that sense of, did that make you more aware after the fact? Like, does it make you think of, you know, because obviously after the fact, you're like, okay, that almost was like a sign of, you know, kind of like, does it make you more hyper aware of those, you know, things like words that people might say or things like, and you're like, I better pay attention to this because something could happen? Or like, does it make you more present or more hyper aware?
For sure. It does make me more present. Present to the fact is, a lot of times we go through our lives and we just skim through because we're busy. We have busy schedules. There's noise always. The TV or the we have music or podcasts or you know, audiobooks. All of that is always in our ears, and so it's easy to walk through life distracted. And I think even still, I battle that, but I realize there are so many things that we are unaware of as we walk through our lives. And so I have to pay attention, because if I don't pay attention, I might miss something that God is telling me. I might miss opportunities to spend time with people that it may be the last time I see them, or any of that. It's just important that I am more present and I am more aware. And I have to be intentional about that, because it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen automatically. It happens because I have to decide to do that. And sometimes that's hard, because we don't want to feel everything all the time. That hurts and it's hard. But to live in that dimension of allowing myself to feel and be aware is a much richer place to walk. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Did it make you fearful of those things? Like, for example, when my husband was deployed, him and my daughter used to do the little, was it the daffodils? Is that what they're called?
Mm-hmm.
Ones where you like blow them? Yeah. Those are the daffodils, right? Okay.
Yeah.
They would always do that. And so when we were sitting at the park while he was deployed, I had the thought of, oh, if something happens to him while he's over there, this is going to be a bittersweet thing, and she'll do it. It'll make me sad. Like, was there like a fear cloud over those things where, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. And I do think it does. There is always a battle to have balance in that, because fear, after you've been through something, especially when you think nothing ever bad is going to happen, then something does, you know, that's just part of our lives. And so it's easy to go, well, you know, this happened before, so, you know, I have to be hyper vigilant. And on the other side of being present, I have to really fight fear. And I have to really do that intentionally as well, because I had the urge to over-control, especially when my kids were at home, the urge to over-control, because I thought, if I can just control their circumstances, then I can make sure nothing bad happens to them. And so, yes, it did make me fearful. I still fight that, not as much now, because, you know, over time it becomes more of a habit to let those things go. And we have to fight those things the minute they enter our minds. And I had to recognize that, okay, no, this is not productive. This is not healthy, what I'm thinking. This is not from God. And this is literally from the enemy of our souls trying to trying to cause me to live in fear. And that's not a healthy place to be either. So it's definitely a balance.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that too, if it made you a helicopter mom after that.
Totally. Yeah. Megan was so gracious with me, and I don't think she had a cell phone when she first started driving, but she had a pager. You guys remember the pagers? And so we'd have our little codes, and she would have to, and she may have had a phone, I can't remember, but she'd have to text me when she got there, when she was here, when she was there. And I, for some reason, I felt like that made me in more control. And if I knew where she was, she would be safe. So yeah, with the kids especially, I had to really fight it.
I mean, it's hard to not, it's like for me, a little bit of a control freak, I guess. So it's hard to, when you feel so out of control during that traumatic situation, especially when you're the parent, to then have more children and then, well, I'm in charge of your well-being. I have to make sure you're safe. And it's literally like PTSD, or basically it's PTSD, especially, you know, I know that it can be traumatic for everybody in its own way. So I don't want to downplay that, but in specific things like an accident and when you see it, major PTSD. Mm-hmm. Family been back to that place?
Yes. It took us a while. And I can't remember how many years. I think it was around year seven. Larry was working in Northern California, and we had currently lived in Southern California. And he wanted to go up to where he was working. And it just happened to be the anniversary of her death. And he just asked, he really wanted to go, and he felt like that would be important for him. And I didn't want to go at first, but it was in Pismo Beach. And she passed away on the dunes. She had an ATV accident. She got disoriented and went off a really high dune and landed on her head at the bottom. And the dunes do change because just the wind and the elements. But to be back there and see the beach that we had camped on, and that part of going back was healing. It was hard. I hated it at first. But to go back, it was healing for me because there was freedom there. I could look at the beauty of the area, the fun times. We went there often. So I was able to start remembering more of the fun times than just the day of the accident.
Yeah. I could only imagine. I mean, after for us, it was at Victor Valley Hospital. And to get to that cemetery, a lot of the time you have to go past it. Like, we couldn't even go past it. I mean, we still have not set foot there since, but just like for the longest time, we could not even drive past it. I did really appreciate, you know, in the book, how you have your grief notes at the end of every chapter for the person who's grieving, and then notes for those who are there for people who are grieving. I think that, if anything, with your story is probably one of the most important parts of your book, just from my experience and the things people say when they shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely got a lot of, oh, you'll have more children.
Ugh. Yeah.
Can you talk about what were the hardest things that people said to you that literally have stuck in your brain? And then also, what is your best advice, you know, for those who haven't read the book, what is your best advice for to help others who are grieving?
We learned a lot through that process. And even still, I know people generally mean well when they come, and people don't know what to say. But in a lot of the things that they said, it was true. Nicole's in a better place. Nicole's enjoying heaven. Yes, she is. But I wanted her that at that moment, I wanted her there with me. So one of the hardest things, I think, for if you're walking through with someone that is hurting, I think the biggest thing is just to show up. I drew some of the most comfort when people would just show up and they just say, I love you, or I'm going to miss Nicole. Even just those things, like, I'm so sorry. And it is true that the Lord worked. He worked beautiful things out of this. But in the first parts of my sorrow, I couldn't handle those things because my heart was just broken. And so I think just showing up for people is so important. Ladies from the church showed up. Sometimes I didn't even know who was there. They filled our refrigerator with casseroles. They put bottled water on the counter. Kids from the horse group, they would come and exercise our horses without even, you know, I didn't even have to think about it. And those things, those are the biggest things that brought comfort to us, just to have someone show up without expectation. Because when somebody expects you to respond, that's a lot of pressure. So that was pressure for me when people would ask a lot of questions and expect something from me. So those are the things that I really found helpful during that time. And in the book, those were the things with the grief notes and the loving them well. I think that those were important for me to express that, because I didn't want the book just to be about our grief story. I actually wanted it to be something that would help people walk through. And when you're in grief, the concentration, for me anyway, my concentration was like zero. So I needed to have little like cliff notes of what I was supposed to do or how I could handle certain situations. And so I believe that's why those were important to include.
How bad did the grief get for you? I want you to let people know like how real it is and how hard it is to go through, just the reality of it.
It's hard to measure, and words cannot convey how hard it gets. And I know it's easy to look at someone, you know, who has been through it, who's walking on the other side in victory, to know, oh, well, it must not have been that hard. You know, even like with both of your stories, it would be easy for people to look at both of you and think, well, you guys are fine now. It must have not been that bad. But there were days that I couldn't get out of bed. And there were days that I thought I was not going to survive. And that is real. And I believe most people who have loss, whatever that loss is, go through that grieving process. That grieving process is part of just recognizing that something is missing from our lives. So there were days that I had to get in the car and I screamed my head off until I couldn't scream anymore, because I had to get the pain inside to release. And that was the only way I knew how to do it. And I had to learn to be brave. And sometimes being brave was, you know, just taking a breath, getting out of bed in the morning. That was like the bravest thing I could do.
Oh, I can't imagine. I think the biggest thing for people that it might help if you explain this to them, but grief doesn't stop. And I feel like a lot of people just assume like, oh, it's been a year, it's been 2 years, it's been 3 years. You're fine. How are you doing? Like, they just avoid it. They don't want to deal with it. Let people know grief doesn't just stop.
No, it doesn't. And I had some people say after a certain amount of time, basically, aren't you over it yet? You know, are you all better yet? And you don't. What I learned is that grief and joy can coexist. We can walk mm-hmm. in joy, but still be grieving. That sorrow will always be a part of me. It's just like someone who's lost a leg. You know, if you lose a limb, you don't get that limb back. You may have help with that. You may have an artificial limb replaced. But you have to learn to walk again, and you walk differently. You walk with a limp, and it's just part of who you are. And that's not meant to be hopeless. That's actually meant to go, okay, no, this is a real thing. There is not a day doesn't go by that I don't think about Nicole and mm-hmm. others that I've lost. And I know that's true for anyone who's lost someone. You think about that person every day. But it's under the surface, but now it's more of a sweet thing. It still hurts, but it's just sweet that I can remember her and think about the funny things about Nicole or, you know, other people. You know, as you get older, you have more people that you lose. So, no, you don't get over it. Grief is not something you get better from. You just learn how to live with it in a productive way that can help you be productive in life.
That's awesome. Thank you for explaining that. I know a lot of people don't understand it and don't get it. I want to backtrack a little bit because I want to express the fact that I am guilty of this in not knowing how to react to someone that's grieving or going through a situation like that. I mean, I've done it to Ashley plenty of times where she's had an anniversary of losing her son and I don't remember. And I know it crushes her because here I am, her best friend, and I don't remember. And it's hard for me. It really is hard for me. But I just want to reiterate how important it is to remember things like that for your friends, how important it is to choose your words wisely. Don't say things that, because I do this a lot, I just, diarrhea of the mouth, sometimes the words that come out, I'm just like, I wish I could take that back. And like, I feel like a lot of people are guilty of that. And I'm not perfect. I try my best, but it's not easy. It's not. And so I think on both sides of that, it's kind of a learning experience. I'm so grateful and gracious for Ashley and her friendship because she has taught me those things like, hello, remember me, remember my situation. This is what I'm going through, and didn't get mad at me. You know what I mean? So that's been amazing. So just thank you for the kindful or the forgivingness of that situation. And I'm sure you've had to deal with that as well, just with people you know, and probably not hearing the things you expected to hear from them.
Yeah, I think like Ashley is a good example of that, but I think it is important that we are gracious with people because I would say 9 times out of 10, people really do intend to be helpful and people don't want to hurt you. And I mean, death is so awkward. It's so unnatural that, you know, none of us know exactly what to say. And so I think on my side of it, it has been important to be gracious to people who do say things because, and understand that they say things because they just want to make it better. But on your point to remembering, I have 2 dear friends, but one, she calls and leaves a message every heaven day of Nicole's and every birthday of Nicole's. And I don't answer the phone. It's just kind of an unspoken thing. You know what she says that's the most comfort to me is just thinking about you and Nicole and how much I love you guys. And if she has a special memory about that, to say that person's name is important. To say that, because you're not causing them, or for me anyway, and you might have different experiences, but for me, it's comforting to hear her name. So, you know, I think on both sides of it, it's important to be gracious, but I would way rather someone show up and say something dumb than not show up at all.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And I am definitely, it does. And I am definitely guilty of that. So I want to know, because I don't know if Ashley did, but I didn't personally know Nicole. I want to know about Nicole, and I am sure our listeners would love to hear about her as well.
Well, of course, as her mom, I think she is amazing. And I feel, but I feel like Nicole was one of the freest people I knew ever. And even as a little kid, she was. But she loved horses. She was really, really a tiny person, gigantic blue eyes. And she just loved people and she loved animals. So I think she might have loved animals more than people, but she loved people quite a bit. So she made it, it was her purpose to make friends wherever she went. So she was an accomplished horse shower and she went really far in that world. But even while she was competing, she made sure she made friends. And she didn't let somebody's rough exterior just, you know, make her avoid them. She just went right up to them and she, because nobody really intimidated her, even though she was this tiny little person, she just loved on people. And that's a good example for me, and her freedom just to express herself and be the person that God's created her to be. That's also was inspiring for me.
Amazing. That's her behind you, right? On the bookshelf.
Yes. Yeah, aww, right there.
I love that. Yeah. And then your book is right under.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I love it.
To remind me what I'm supposed to be doing. What's my purpose?
I love that.
I did have a question. You know, obviously our podcast is about, you know, having faith through your hard times. But I, like I said, I like to be real and it's not always great. Did you struggle with your faith after Nicole died? Did it make you question a lot of things that you had already believed and all of that?
Yes. Before Nicole died, I had my preconceived ideas of what God, who God was, what my Christian life was supposed to be. We didn't have a perfect life for sure. But I did have the misconception that if I was a good little Christian girl, nothing major would happen. And, you know, that's not biblical at all. After she went to heaven, I had to really decide if what I believed before was true. Was there a God? Did he love me? And really search the scripture to find out who he really is. And we struggled. I struggled with my belief. I struggled with being angry at him. And then I also struggled with, well, if I am a Christian, I shouldn't be grieving at all, because if she's in heaven, I shouldn't be grieving. And Nicole is in heaven. She's more alive than I am, but that doesn't take away my sadness at her being gone. So I had to really reconcile that and really struggle with that. And you know what? The Lord is so good, because he just walked alongside me with that. And sometimes he had to pick me up and, you know, carry me, because I was such a mess. But I think that the main thing is to recognize that grief is real. And in Thessalonians, it talks about how we grieve, but we grieve with hope. And so as a Christian, we are going to hurt. You know, we are going to grieve when loss happens. That's just the way, that's actually the way he created us. But to recognize that even in my deepest sorrow, he walked with me, and he didn't condemn me for struggling. And after that, I was able to just recognize that everybody struggles on this earth. And I don't have the big purpose. I really wanted to find out the big purpose of Nicole's death. And my little mind can't contain that. And so just to be able to accept that and take his hand instead of fighting him.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, which I feel like a lot of people get the incorrect information about this. And they say, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. And I know this, and I'm sure Ashley does, and you do as well. Like, that is not true. God does give you more than you can handle. He wants to see if we can rely on him in the hard times. How did you get through that? How did you hit that point and say, okay, this is more than I can handle, and all right, God, where are you? How did you go through that?
That actually happened fairly quickly, as far as realizing I couldn't handle it, because in the hospital, when we were waiting for the doctor to come out and give us the news, which in my heart of hearts, I knew what the news would be. We were kind of circled around a little, you know, in the little emergency waiting room, and there's tons of people in there. And when the doctor came in, he just said, he said these words, which were very blunt. He just said, basically, Nicole died at the beach. And so, and he asked if we wanted to say the Lord's Prayer with the chaplain that was there. And I really felt like the Lord was saying, no, you got to reach right to me. And even though I struggled with him through that, I knew that he was my lifeline. And so we prayed from our hearts there in the emergency room. And then Larry said to me, my husband Larry said, you know, we got to really be careful not to let Satan in. And at first I thought that was kind of weird, but what he was meaning is, the enemy of our souls wants to defeat us and make us crawl in a hole and never come out. So I knew that that part of it was that I couldn't rely, I couldn't handle this. It was way too, I was way too deep. And the only way I was going to survive is to allow the Lord to lift me up and do it. It wasn't easy. It is not like some platitude like, oh, he left me up and I was fine. It wasn't like that. It was just barely my lifeline at so many times. And I believe Jesus mourned with me and grieved with me during that time. I think, you know, the scripture tells us that he saves our tears in a bottle. You know, he recognizes our pain. And so I think that that part of it happened fairly quickly where, you know, and during that, you know, struggling after that with just the reality of what that looked like.
Amazing. It's so encouraging because so many people, they're in that situation and they don't know what to do. They panic. They let the enemy in. They let the bad thoughts take a hold of them. And if only everyone knew to just turn to God right away, turn to God. It's hard.
And that looks different for everyone, you know, and it's hard to turn to God. And even if in my little picture in my mind, it's just basically a yielding to him, like going, okay. And it doesn't fix, and to recognize it doesn't fix. He doesn't just take away the pain or fix it right then, but he's with me during that.
You said you and Larry have been married for 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
Huge accomplishment. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I say that because not only is marriage hard, you know, even starting out as a blended family is not easy, but not a lot of marriages survive the death of a child. You know, whether it's miscarriage or, you know, an older child or anything like that, any death of a child, marriages don't tend to last. And I've seen it in ways where, you know, one person is obviously grieving in a different way, just like shutting their feelings off and like acting out in ways that kind of are just detrimental to the marriage. Or, you know, it's one person upset because the other person is not grieving the same way as they are. Did you guys deal with a lot of those issues? Or do you have advice for people who are dealing with that or have gone through that?
Yes and yes. We dealt with it a lot. We recognized early on that we had to respect each other's way of grieving because we grieve differently. And Larry is a, he is a doer and a thinker, and he wanted to figure it out. Larry got to Nicole first, and he actually performed CPR on her. So there were a lot of things that he experienced very up close that he needed to process. But on the other hand, he knew that to process those things for me, with me, would be, cause me more pain. So we learned early on that it was okay for him to go talk to someone. We had, he had a pastor and a couple of friends that he would talk to, and for me to talk to other people about some of the ways that I was feeling, because we had to respect that we felt differently, and not to expect anything out of each other, as far as everyone reacts to grief. Even not in a marriage, everyone reacts to grief in a different way. And so just to be able to respect that of each other. And our youth pastor, Buzzy, at the time, he reminded us that this is a real thing, that marriages do struggle after the loss of a child. So he encouraged us to really nurture our marriage and to be able to have times where we could be together, like go on dates, be intentional about that, go on dates, have talks, slow down, and, you know, let each other be the people they needed to be at that point. Because Larry was really good at respecting my sorrow as a mama, and I needed to respect his sorrow as a dad, you know, as the protector sort of role. So, and to understand that those are different. So I would say definitely be intentional about that, and let your spouse or anyone else walking through the journey with you, let them grieve in their own way, and understand that there is no right or wrong way to grieve. You have to let them walk through that journey on their own. You know, check in with them often, you know, how you doing, you know, with all of this, but just to be able to let them be, because, you know, we all need to feel that and walk that individually.
That's great. Thank you. I do have a very vague, vague memory of being in the church parking lot. And I believe it was the day of her funeral. I don't have any memory of knowing her, but I know my brother probably was in youth group at the same time. Because what year was she born?
She was born in 81.
81, okay. So he was 79. Ooh. I mean, obviously, yeah. I remember Buzzy.
Yeah.
Mr. Buzzy.
Yeah.
And so I think that, because, I mean, you knew my parents for a while, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So I remember vaguely coming to the parking lot on the day of the funeral, and it was packed.
Yeah.
Jam-packed.
Yeah.
And then I don't think we went in because there was no parking.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Can you talk about the funeral and just Nicole's effect on people and her legacy still to this day of, you know, in her short life, and how she just affected people?
Okay. The funeral was one of those, and one of those miraculous, amazing days. And I know that sounds weird to talk about a funeral in that way, but we felt just such presence of support, but also just God's love. And we just began to get a glimpse of what would happen as the ripple effect of Nicole's life. I did not know half the stories that I heard that day. There was one of the stories that I heard, and this was at the gravesite, kind of going out of order, but this girl had come up to us and just told us that Nicole talked to her in the foyer of the church for youth group. She did not want to go in because she did not fit in with the typical youth group kid, you know, kids. She was rough looking and had a really rough exterior. And Nicole came out, this little, you know, spunky kid, and she came out and just said, no, come on in. And she talked to her and she made her feel a part. And so that was just one of the stories. We had standing room only in the back of the gym. We had it in the gym at our church. And I don't know how many people were there, you know, over 600. I think there were about 800 people. And at one point, the pastor came up and said, there's still people coming in. Do you want us to go ahead and start? And we said, no, let them come in. Because it was important that day that we celebrate her life, but also there were a lot of hurting people there, and to give hope and to say to especially the other kids in youth group at that time, not to give up, because there was a feeling of despair before the service. But after the service, I felt like there was a feeling of hope. And we heard tons of stories of how she impacted people, how she made people feel loved. And so many people said, oh, Nicole was my best friend. Nicole was my best friend. And we're thinking, you know, how can one person have so many best friends? But just the example of how she lived her life, to live her life, was totally defined by love. And a few days after the service, a friend of mine gave me a bookmark that said the meaning of her name is Victorious Heart. And that's where the title of my book comes from. But she lived with a victorious heart. That described her to a T. And that is why I try to really remember to live that way, to live victoriously. And the way to live victorious is to love people, you know, and try to not have preconceived ideas about people's background or what people are thinking. Just love them. And I don't always do it well, but try to live that example. So that day was very special. And it's a day that I kind of remember, and I actually smile, because I think about Pastor Tom Tom Mercer of High Desert Church wrote the foreword of my book. And he put, Nicole invited 800 people to church today, or something like that. And I think that was really a special, special part of that day.
That's just, I mean, for a high schooler. I mean, I definitely did not invite that many people to church in high school.
Yeah.
Or even in my adult life.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That is like a lot of people that she touched. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. She just had a way, and it wasn't super non-judging, very welcoming. But she wasn't a wimp. I mean, she was one tough little girl, but she just did her, she did life, you know, and did things the way she felt like she should do them.
I mean, I feel like we know where she got that from.
Like, I don't know.
Absolutely. Throughout the years, you have been someone that has always stuck in my head. You've been a part of my life, just such an amazing heart. You see God in you, and that's amazing. And obviously, you raised her the same way, and that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That is so beautiful.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So, any last thoughts or things to share?
I would encourage anyone going through grief, and right now, we'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who's not. And grief can come in all different forms. But just to know that you're not alone and that you're going to make it, I think that's the main thing. Just to know you are going to make it, because it doesn't feel like you're going to make it, but you will. And God can make beautiful things out of that. And it's not going to be, it may not be the way you picture it, but just know that every day, just get up and do the next right thing. Do what's in front of you. And sometimes those are hard days, but just to do that, and he will, and seek him fully, and he will help you through every day. And it's not going to be the picture you think, but it will be beautiful.
Yeah. It's amazing. I think a lot of people tend to hope that God's going to put us in this great situation, and that's not always true. He's creating certain things for a reason. So he puts us through bad situations, and not everybody will have that good outcome or a good life. And it's what makes us who we are, and it's what God wants from us. And that's hard for people to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have to remember too, that what we see, we're so visual that what we see is not all there is. And if we can remember that, that, you know, just this physical earth, it's hard. It's hard for a lot of people. And there's a lot of hurting people out there, but this is not it. And I have to keep my eyes focused on that, that there are so many things that God is doing where we can't see it. So if we can just keep focusing our eyes there, you know, and that's the whole purpose of my book, is just to remind people that you can make it through any hard thing, and life does not feel fair. There's people who seem like they have it easy, but that doesn't really matter. I can't compare myself to anyone else. I want to give those people who are hurting just hope that they can make it, and just some help through that.
That is sage advice. Where can everybody find your book?
Victoria's Heart, you can get that at Amazon or anywhere books are sold. I also have a website where I write a blog and there's some interviews and different things on there. And that's wildvictoriousheart.com. There's also a link on there to buy the book as well. It'll just direct you right to Amazon.
Such a good book. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Thank you.
It traveled a little bit with me.
I like those worn, torn.
I have the ebook.
Yeah.
I have the ebook.
Yes. They're both good. They both work.
They do, but it. I really, honestly, to be honest, I don't like ebooks. I like to be able to turn the page. I like to be able to highlight. Like, yeah. I need like a physical. I mean, it doesn't help that it's like on an iPad Pro.
Yeah.
That's way too big.
Yeah.
I can't read. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like reading the book like this. Flip the page.
Yeah. There's something about a physical book, you know, for book girls, yeah, especially. There's something about that physical book where you can highlight, you can circle, you can do all that. So, you know.
So funny. I'm the opposite. I was asking Kim, I was like, is there an audio for it? I'm not a reader at all, but I love learning things. So for me, I'm like, I need audio everything. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah. So. Well, hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have it out in audio. So I will keep you guys posted on that.
Awesome.
That's great.
But I just want to say congratulations on the book. It's a huge accomplishment. I know it was not easy for you. And I know that you got a lot out of it while doing it, which is amazing. So congratulations on the book.
Thank you, Amber.
You're so welcome. Sorry. Go ahead, Ash.
Well, now I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm the worst.
Oh, do you have an Instagram that people can follow, or is it just strictly your website?
I have Instagram, so it's just Kim Peacock, so that's easy. And then I also have Facebook, and I'm super non-techno, so I don't post as much as I should, but there are links on my website for both of those as well.
Okay.
So, awesome. Yeah, I'm trying to get better at posting, but it's just, you know, it's...
It's a lot of work.
It's not my favorite thing to do. It is a lot of work to keep up. So, but I do post periodically. So check those out too.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us and sharing. Because I know it's not easy, but it's also helpful. I know, like, to talk about your child, to keep their memory alive. But just sharing like the nitty gritty of grief, and you wrote such a great book that is super helpful. for, you know, for both sides. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing, being a part of our little podcast.
Yeah, I love it. I love your podcast. It's great. And thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you girls.
Okay, well, you guys can follow us on Uncommon Faith Podcast on Instagram, and you can email us at uncommonfaithpodcast@gmail.com. You can find me at ashley.reed. And Amber, you did a little change, slight change.
I took the underscores. It's Hedonia by Amber on Instagram.
We're working on it.
She always has to correct me.
It was very complicated. She finally.
I'm not tech savvy either, yeah. Kim.
You like how Kim was like, it's easy, it's just Kim Peacock. And you're like, yeah, everyone is easy but Amber.
I'm a difficult human. I don't know what to tell you.
She's just a complicated girl.
Progress.
She's goodness. Like. Yeah, I took out the underscores, so progress. Progress. We're getting there. But that's a, yeah.
Goodness.
So.
Okay. Till next time.
Till next time, guys. Yeah, get your giggles out, Amber. Till next time. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.